Channel 2 Right in continuation of the visit, Fell's visit, on Saturday, the 16th of May, 1970, beginning of Channel 2 Right. And this is just a short little bit of this, just a little bit on Channel 2 Right, Channel 2 Right. And this is the end of Fell's visit on Saturday morning, the 16th of May, 1970.
Well, you know, I've got two uncles that said it was very much for Mister.
How managed to survive this long?
Well,
I'm glad.
Now
that was one, two, three of you.
Yeah. Yeah, they were four of us in there, but the other fellow was a little fella. His name was Gaffey, and he was from Hot Springs, Arkansas. He wasn't big enough to do anything. And we didn't ask him nothing. There was four of us.
Yeah.
And see, them compartments on there was for six people.
Oh.
And there were six on there. But just soon as any time over there, you know, like it was then, any important man come in, while they got up and he sat down, you know, quite just object from what we would, you know.
Oh.
Yeah, that's the thing about it. It wasn't nothing unusual, because any woman would get up and give a man the seat, you know, which American boys didn't understand that and didn't like it very much. And,
oh, I see.
Yeah.
And didn't mind letting them know it.
So, now, was that Pruitt who did the...
He opened the door.
He opened the door?
Yeah, and I took him by the arm and raised him up, you know, to show him something I could do.
Yeah.
And that old big 6'6" man put that number 12 in his back and kicked him out the door. And I looked at him, he was still rolling down that embankment. Last time I seen him.
Yeah. And then these women thought they was gonna be next.
That's right. And Lala, Eugene Lala told Pruitt catch that girl, and he grabbed her. And so after a while, with that little book and what we knowed and all like that, why we made them understand why we done it. And then she opened up that basket of rations.
Yeah. What'd she have in
it? I don't know. She had some kind of buns. Sandwich and some pickle, and she had pie and cake, and oh, she had it full. I don't know why in the devil they'd started, but they sure did have some groceries to get there. And you know, we hadn't had nothing to eat like that in a long time.
Yeah.
And going on that trip, something else that happened to me. When we got to Dijon, they said then that it was about the size city that Chicago was. And I told them, I said, one of them was asleep. I don't remember which one was asleep, but they left two there. And I don't think I ever been any hungry in my life. And I told him, I said, I'm going up there and get something to eat. And I said, then I'll come back myself. And about the only trouble you had with those prisoners is to keep Frenchmen from picking at them.
Oh.
That was about the only thing. And I went up there, and the only place in the I picked out a very nice place. And the only place that was vacant to sit down was over next to a window. just two people table for two. And they were some ladies sitting there, and of course they went over and asked her about me sitting there, and she said, perfectly all right. And those French people could make some of the best soup you ever drank in your life.
Now, oh, really?
But it looks like it'd be better running under a bridge or something or other. There ain't nothing to it. Sometimes it looks as clear as water, but nevertheless, it's good. And I never drank any soup since that tastes like that. They brought me a bowl of soup, and I consumed it right quick. And ate up my salad. And those people over there mighty to serve you meals and courses, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And when they brought my dinner, they brought that woman a plate of snails. And she had a little fork about that long. And I looked over there, and she's gouging them snails out of that shell eating them. I tell you, Faye, I never got as sick in my life. I couldn't eat my dinner, and I had to get out of there. I stopped out there on the edge of the street, and something I didn't never do is vomit. But I stayed out there, and I gagged a little bit, and I went on. That never had happened to me before, but just see that woman picking them snails out of there. Ain't it kind of money, that nasty looking stuff, you know?
Squirmy, slimy.
Uh-huh. And so I didn't get anything to eat. But, I remember one time we was hiking, and, they're most always when them old ladies come around with them sandwiches and sell them in there. A franc a piece, which was 20 cents. And I had one franc. That was all I had. And the old lady come along. I got me a bun, hamburger, or whatever it was. And I bit it. I come in chewing it. Pruitt said to me, he said, Pat said, you see a woman's fingernail? I said, here, you son of a so-and-so, you eat this. I couldn't eat it. He sat up there and laughed and ate my sandwich, you know. Is that a peach tree out there? Huh?
No.
Look how it's
mimosa there. Tree.
You know, I was sitting on the side of the bed this morning looking out the window, and I seen that sweet gum tree shedding its leaves. Green.
Yeah, dry.
Dry. I mean, they turned kind of yellow, and they was falling off.
Instead, I'll give you some lunch.
Oh, no, I just had breakfast just a little while ago.
Well, I guess we'll have to promise you not to kidnap you and keep you all morning every morning.
Oh, that don't make no difference. I ain't got nothing to do.
These are low dogwoods. Of course, they don't have roots, Phil. They are right on top.
Uh-huh.
That's what's wrong with them, isn't it?
Well, I sure appreciate you coming over and looking at my horses, because somehow or other I just felt it was a little high.
This is Channel 2 Riding and the end of Fell's visit on Saturday morning, the 16th of May, 1970. This is the continuation and the end of Fell's visit. Saturday morning, the 16th of May, 1970. Channel 2 right, 105. Channel 2 right, 105. Channel 2 right, 105. Now, this is Saturday morning, the 6th of June, 1970. Saturday morning, the 6th of June, 1970, and I'm setting it up for Miss Patterson. We're going to use that same ruse we did on Miss Bessie and Miss Daisy on Thursday, that I'm out of condition and need a little remedy. Need a little remedy. And she just might come over here and talk about some of her fine remedies. This is Saturday morning, the 6th of May, 1970. Channel 2 right, 115. Along in there.
Everywhere, Miss Patterson, just sort of. Well, I tell you what, that's an electric stove, and I've got a gas stove over here. My mother does. Sit down right here,
okay,
and I'll see what he's up to. He's in the line down. He's gonna get up.
This heater, is it a gas or what, honey?
It's one of those kerosene.
Kerosene.
Yeah,
heater.
We had a little gas heater over here, you know.
Good morning. Just what ails you now? I'm like the nigger now. You know, you ask a nigger anything, he said, "What ails you?" And so that's what I was asking you.
I just been droopy for 2 or 3 days and getting up dizzy. Do you have a dizzy?
Oh, yeah. That, I tell you, guy, that can be your liver not acting. You know, your liver can cause you lots of trouble.
Well, that's what I was afraid of.
And, you know, it can make you do lots of things to you when your liver don't act like it ought to. But I tell you what I'd do, and it won't hurt you. Get you some Carter liver pills.
Yeah.
And I would take at least 2. Are you easy to purge?
Yeah.
Well, I think about 2 a night.
Yeah.
And I would take those for about 3 or 4 nights that way. And they won't hurt him, and it'll rouse that liver. It'll clean out this poison that's in you.
Yeah.
We're living in a poison world now. That ain't no kidding about it. You know, with the conditions that we have so much spray, everything that we got, you know, is against us. Even this detergent we use, but still we use it.
Yeah.
And so with it all those things and all, that we have to breathe, the air we breathe is, you know, so against us and all.
Carter's liver pill?
Yeah, Carter liver pill. You can get them down at Fred Woods.
And take 2 of them?
I take 2 a night.
At night, you wouldn't take them in the daytime.
Well, you can take them any time for that concern, but I was just thinking that, you know, in other words, you don't know you're taking them. You know, I mean, for us, making you sick at your stomach and all such things as that.
Yeah.
I used to, when I got like that, I'd take me some Calamar, but you can't buy it now.
Oh, what's wrong?
I don't know, you know, doctors, you know, they used to, you know, you could get those things, Calamar and quinine and things like that. But now then you can't get all that. They even to quit making Calamar.
And it would work you out.
It would work you out, but that called liver pill is about the next thing to it as I know of. But now I know whenever Paul, when he was 5 years old, our son, he had his intestines tied in knots. You know, and he had 3 intestines that tied up.
Oh, really?
And now that he had 1 kink, 2 kinks, and 3 kinks in those intestines.
Oh.
And so he just got in such a bloom. You know, in other words, they gave him a shot to knock him out, and it didn't knock him out. Well, you know, when you're suffering like that, you're suffering. Well, after he was in the operated on, then the fever started. and his mouth started setting. And then he liked to went into pneumonia.
Good Lord.
And so that his fever just raged. And they had, we had the surgeon there with him. Then our family physician was in the room, and an intern was in there, in the room with him. And then we had to have this head specialist. You know, that made four doctors was in the room with him. Well, Dr. Johnson, that was in Waycross. And I asked him, I just backed back, you know, in the bathroom. He had a private room. And sat down, you know, in the bathroom. They're giving those doctors a change. And Dr. Johnson had a habit of sticking his tongue in his mouth whenever he was worried. So he come to the bathroom door and was talking to me, and I asked him about Paul. He says, well, it's hard to do a perfect operation as this was, and then something like this sets in. But he says, you see it as well as I do. He says, he either makes a change quick or he won't make it. And I said, Dr. Johnson, I told him how his bowels had been doing. And I said, that boy's liver don't act. I said, because, you know, his stew was gray. That's not a normal color. Mm-hmm. And I said, that boy's liver's just not acting. I said, you can't tell me. I know. No. Mm-hmm. And I said, I wish you'd give him a dose of calomel. And now him in the hospital, Dr. Johnson walked back, and he told those doctors what I said. And he says, I never done that. And he says, I just don't know about it. And so they all discussed it, and they said, well, let's try it. And so they gave it to him. And so the next morning, they gave him a dose of castor oil, like they used to do back when I was a child. You know, castor oil's good for you, too. Doctor said one time, told me that it just worked pine buzz and shoe heels and things out of it. You didn't know it was in that. But anyway, that not the next morning that Paul's fever was still high, but the next morning it was down to 99 after that, you know, that he'd taken that medicine. And he come out of it right now, what I'm telling you about. And I knew one more child like Paul, about the age of Paul, was operated on for appendicitis. He done just like Paul did, and Dr. Johnson was the doctor to give me calomel too. He said he never had done that.
Yeah.
But so it did work. And if you work yourself out, I imagine you'll see a difference.
But if you had watched Paul,
mm-hmm.
You were just guessing. You had watched him.
I watched him, and I knew what I was talking about, and I knew that I had watched him like I had, and I knew that liver was not acting. If your liver's acting, John, it throws off poison.
Yeah.
But when that liver gets sluggish and it won't act and all like that, it's nothing that'll throw it off, you see. And that empties your gallbladder.
Yeah.
And all such things as that.
That castor oil. Oh, yeah.
That castor oil, you know, and you know, I hadn't known them to give castor oil in a many a day. But when Fell was in the hospital, they give him, it was either two or three doses whenever he was in the medical center and had that operation. And they give him several doses.
Well, does it act on the liver?
It acts on your liver. I mean, in other words, this year, caught a liver pill, you know, emptied into the stomach, and the castor oil carries it on off. Now, this is something that makes sense, that where, you know, you can understand it. Dr. Cook and Albany, they don't make a better doctor than he was. I don't think he's dead now, but he still, you know, was living last time I was up there, but he's too old to practice. But he was one of as good a surgeons as you've ever seen, and one as good a doctor as you've ever seen. Well, that is one thing he believed in. They had a Cook capsule that you could buy at any of the drugstores. And boy, when you take that dose of castor oil, you knew the difference. And he said that those intestines, you know, the large one, has pockets in it, if you've ever seen. You know, in other words, have you ever seen a hog dressed to the, you know, inside? You know, all of us, don't care if it is an animal, works on the same kind of principle, you know, I have organs and things. Well, those big intestines has pockets in it. Well, Dr. Cook says that those pockets in there, the food and the stuff accumulates back into those pockets and says they don't move out. And he says you get where you just got a movement right into the middle, you know, those intestines. And he says that castor oil will lubricate that and make it kind of loose and come out of that. And he says that sticks to those intestines in there, says it poisons the system. And he says it's been in there for months and months, that you don't get elimination all through the stomach.
Well, no, it's right there at that stomach and the line in the stomach. That's where the nourishment goes. Mm-hmm. And if there's anything else, it'll go right in the mm-hmm. system too, won't it?
Yeah. But now that's, and I know
Phil said, thought of that.
And when Phil was in the hospital up there, they gave him, now his evidently was doing the same identical thing that Dr. Cook said that it will do. That's where he says you get kookaburras and shoe heels and all like that out of your stomach. You know, when you take something like that. Well, whenever they gave Phil that castor oil, they'd give it to him at night. But if I was you, I'd take those called little pills and castor oil the next morning. You can get this tasteless. You know how to take castor oil without it tasting it, don't you?
Oh, it don't worry me. Tell me, though.
Well, you can put a little orange juice or something like that in the bottom, warm your castor oil, have it warm.
Oh.
And put a little orange juice or something in the bottom of it, or lemon juice.
In the bottom,
and then a little bit on top. And you take it. And then when you'll never know when you throw it in your mouth, you'd rather know you taste that lemon juice or orange juice.
Never bothered me.
And Phil said when he was in the hospital up there, he says, I didn't think it was nothing in me. He says, I just didn't think it. He hadn't been eating anything while he'd been there, so I just knowed good and well there wasn't nothing in there. But he says he found out. He said that he never had such elimination in his life, you know, as he had. After he taken that, says that, you know, it come out and all like that. And you couldn't feel him up hardly whenever he got through it. When he was so hungry, anything in the world was, you know, good to him. Go ahead.
Do you run into this very often, Mabel? When you raise your children, mm-hmm. I know you did. But well, Paul's children, do they need medication?
Yes, they certainly do. Now you know, Juanita, I had a time with her. You know, when little Mary and Paul was a baby, that little old Mary. Had began to have fever, and it was running around 103 and better, and it just stayed there. Well, I called Ms. Denton. I couldn't get that Juanita. She just wouldn't stay at home, and they was over at my house. And I just sit with Mary in my lap, you know, like my mama did, bathing on, all like that, trying to keep that fever down. So I called Ms. Denton, and Mr. Denton came over there, Juanita's daddy, and said that the doctor said for you to bring her up there. So I carried her up there to the doctor's office, and I told her that her bowels just hadn't moved. And I said, that's what's the matter with this fever. He said, oh, who's ever heard tell of such things? So that's an old grandma for you. I said, it don't make no difference if the bowels don't move once, twice a week. Well, I said, I know that isn't so. And that was Dr. Brill. I haven't got no use for him to this day. He's still up there. And
baby doctor.
Yeah, and I brought her back home. Now, from Monday to Thursday, I knew her bowels hadn't moved. I knew that because I had been right with her.
Yeah.
And so it was a nigger woman, Miss Denton, sent out there to help me, and she stayed with those children even till the twins came up, and she just worshipped those children. That's when she first went to work, and Miss Denton kept this nigger to look after those children. And so I told Letty, I says, Letty, I says, I don't care what they say. I says, I'm going to give this child an enema. And so I reckon Mayor, well, Paula Jane was a baby too. And you know Mayor was mighty little because not 2 years difference in them. And so that she got me, I told her what to get and all like that, and I held her in my lap and give it to her, and then I had one of these little old potties. And now that, so I set her up in that, in my lap. And I'm going to tell you, it was just like pulling a cork out of a jug whenever her bowels moved. It like, I thought it was going to go in my lap. Which it didn't make no difference to me. And that poor little old bitty thing, I'm going to tell you, in just a few minutes, after her bowels moved, that just a few minutes, she just fell asleep right in my lap. Yeah. I got up and laid her down. That was 3 o'clock in the afternoon. That child slept. That fever went off for her so quick until it left her kind of lifeless. And she slept. She slept till the next morning about 9 o'clock, and it like to skid the life out of her.
Why, Miss Patterson?
She slept from 3 o'clock that afternoon to way late the next morning. Her fever just went off, and my Gary, she just was, you know.
She was just
exhausted.
Exhausted. Just the great relief.
And now so that after she was up, I reckon about 3 years old. And she was going to Dr. Strange down there. Anyway, that she had a cold, and a little old thing got cold, got so bad on her, until she liked it, went pneumonia. And so they put her in the hospital, and that child, I thought we was going to lose her. So one afternoon down there, Paul said he had to go to Gainesville and asked why I needed it, and that's before Paula Jane was born. That will show you how,
yes.
No, Mary wasn't 3,
that's
because
right.
They wasn't, if Juanita was pretty good size for Paula Jane, for which Paula was born. And Paul says, I got to go to town, and says, Juanita said, well, I got to stay here with Mary. She said, he says, well, I'm willing to risk it with mother, says that, come on and go with me. Well, Mary wanted me to hold her. So I had her in my lap, and the nurse come in, and she's raging with fever too.
Yeah.
And the nurse came in, and pull a little thing, you know, they'd give her those shots, and whenever they'd pull her pants down, she'd snatch them up. They'd pull them down, she'd snatch them up. Well, anyhow, the little old thing, what do you know about looking at your tongue? Let's see it. It's white, I bet you.
Yeah, it's coated.
Yeah, see that? Yeah. And now, but anyway, that little old, I'm talking about when Mary was in the hospital, that's where Paula was born. And so the nurse came in, had to take a temperature, and you know, they had to, couldn't take a child that size on a, you know,
rectum.
And so that little old Mary, she thought they was going to give her a shot, and she had me right around the neck, you know, and wouldn't turn me loose, you know, and I was holding her, and every time they pull their pants down, I mean, she'd snatch them right back up. So that they using that that thermometer, just in a minute, whenever it did, you know, her raring, her bowels moved, and whenever they did, it was just green, just like you've seen on a pond, that old slimy stuff on a pond. And so, it, of course, it went all in my hand and on the bed and everything.
That was pure bile.
It was pure bile. And so whenever it did, her fever went off just like it did in, you know, several years later.
Yeah.
That I was telling you about that time, and her fever went right on off, and she went to sleep. And the next morning I went down, it liked to skin me to death. She's laying there just lifeless. But she had suffered so long, and you've been so sick till she was just exhausted.
Yeah.
So I says, Paul, I says, what's wrong? Well, Paul, you know, had 8 years, you know, in the hospital. You're working in the hospital in the Navy.
Yeah.
And he says, Mother, She's just exhausted. Says, now don't worry. Says, she's not unconscious nor nothing. Says, she's asleep. And it's normal. You know, and says, she'll be all right. Well, I left that and went on to Mickey Nope up there, and Miss Denton were on that red and white store then. And I got in there, and Miss Denton was just crying. She'd been down there, and she was scared to death. Mr. Denton come up there. He says, I'm calling an ambulance and carry it to Gainesville. So that's what I'm going to do with her. Says, I'm not leaving her down there no longer. Then I talked to Miss Denton and told her what Paul said about it. And so it kind of satisfied him. Well, whenever she woke up, that child didn't have any more fever. Her fever was gone. Hmm. And it wasn't long before she was out of the hospital.
Now that was?
Mary.
Mary, yeah.
Mary.
Is Mary the oldest?
Mary's the oldest.
Yeah.
But now I had all that trouble with Juanita until these others came along. And when they began to have fever, the first thing she did was give them an enema.
Yeah.
You know, and that will relieve fever. Now, that Ricky, my niece's little boy, they had been to the doctor's office, and he'd give him a shot, and they brought him back to the house. And when I got down there to him, his fever was over 106. And the first thing I'd done was grab a syringe and, you know, give him that enema, and then we'd take him and wrap him up in wet towels, you know, and his fever went right on down. But that fever, you know, can mess you up. It can run your brains.
Yeah, and it's exhausting, isn't it?
It's
tiring.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's tiring. That fever, you know, when it goes off, you know, it leaves you off for a week.
It makes you feel like you had a spell of sickness. That's the way you feel. That is a spell of sickness, isn't it?
But I believe, Guy, if you do that, that's something that will hurt you. And generally, when I go to a doctor, you know, I generally have to come back to the doctor myself.
Well, that's what we knew, and you just had had such experience in here because...
Yeah, you know, I've had a blood clot in my left leg, thigh, for the over a month now, and that's given me a lot of trouble.
Painful?
It's painful. It's awful painful, but they've given me a lot of that sulfa drugs.
What,
And all like that, you know, that has got it, you know, trying to dissolve it, but it's still sore. It's not still over it.
Mm-hmm.
And I went over there at the doctor that taken Dr. Daly's place, he's taking a special course up there in medical center. He had this other doctor in there in his place. He thought I was coming down with the shingles. Well, I waited nearly 4 weeks before I went back, and it wasn't no shingles. He knew it wasn't no shingles when he told me that. And he, the only thing I asked him, I said, well, aren't you going to give me anything? He said, all I can tell you to do is stay in church extra hour Sunday. And my sister in Albany, Georgia, she said, did he tell you what for you to do while you sat there? I said, no, forgot to tell me that. But now that was all he told me to do, just sit in church extra hours. But that side, I can't lay on that side but just a few minutes, you know, now. You know, it's right in the thigh. They say their blood clots generally is in the below the knee, but this is above the knee.
Them doctors have to learn just like anybody else.
They go, in other words, we're guinea pigs for them.
Yeah.
I heard, read a piece of doctor wrote one time, and he said that if it wasn't nature taking care of what doctors' mistakes,
yeah,
the doctors made, says it wouldn't be nobody living.
Yeah.
And he said that he went, when he first got out of school, he went with another doctor to see a patient.
Yeah.
And he said that he went in there and he examined the patient, said he didn't know what's the matter with the man. And this other doctor didn't either, but they gave him a whole lot of medicine. And said when he left there, said that he told him, he said, well, couldn't find out what's the matter with that man. He said, neither could I. He said, well, you give him a whole lot of medicine. He says, yes. He says that you can give it to him till you can find out what is the matter with him. And he said that he quit practicing right then. He thought, well, if that was the way it would have to be, he said he didn't want none of it.
Mabel, have you learned anything, any remedies from the colored people you have lived with and worked with? Do they generally have some
remedies? God, old people used to couldn't have doctors like they do now because they just didn't have doctors.
Yeah.
You know, and they had to go by horse and buggy. Or maybe you 10 or 15 miles over this way, they went to see a patient. Well, before you could get a patient to you, and get a doctor to you, heck, you could be dead. And people had to learn back yonder years ago, they had to learn to do these things themselves. And my mama was a good doctor, and my old sister, my older sister is too. Now, she,
now you learned from your mama?
My mama, and things that I saw her do.
Mm-hmm.
And all like that, and my older sister, I just about soon take her advice as take the doctor's advice, because she's had the experience. And I have seen doctors. Hall used to come and get my mama if he had a baby that was bad or sick. He'd come get my mother to go with him to see that child.
Oh, really?
Because he said that mama knew more about, you know, children than he did, because mama had raised so many of them.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen her sit all night long, you know, and never lay down, you know, one of the grandchildren would be sick, and she, when I was telling you about give me the dry, that she would be sitting, I've seen her sit all night long with that child on a pillow, and every few minutes you would see her reach over there, you know, and get wet that rag. And she would bathe her, all on feet and legs and arms, you know, and then put her face and put that cloth on her forehead. And that was trying to keep that fever down. And but I've seen her do that all night long, and she wouldn't even lay that child down. And I've learned lots of it like that, too.
Well, now, they, you see, they didn't have the doctor in the hospital, like you say. So they learned to respect things like a fever, didn't they?
Yeah, they had to. Because
they knew what a fever could do.
Mm-hmm.
Eat you up.
It could eat you up, and then it can affect your brains.
Yeah.
But now I'll tell you what happened to one of my nephews. That he came to Jacksonville to see his brother that was working there. And I don't say it because it was Arthur. My sister Mary Lou had 9 children. And she had one as a homely looking as anybody's ever had, but older she gets, you've seen people, more attractive she is.
Mm-hmm.
But she had, they say my mother and daddy won the prize. My mother won the prize of Albany, being the prettiest girl there in Albany.
Your mother?
My mother. And then after her and my daddy married, they won the prize of Albany for being the best looking couple there. Well, now, Mama's children didn't get none of that. We didn't get none of us. I always thought we was the ugliest bunch of youngins I've ever seen. But some of the grandchildren has got it.
Yeah.
And Mary Lou, she did have some good-looking boys. And she had 2 mighty good-looking daughters, too. One of them now is 57, but you would take her for... This one, give me the washing machine, dryer. And my niece, that she owned a fashion shop, and Sylvester Jordan and her husband owns a checkerboard feed store there. And they was by the home about a month ago. They'd been down in Florida and stopped by to see us. And she, they're badly in all Jacksonville, and Bessalou is 57 years old. Well, you would take them for a person around 40, 45 years old. And they're just as, and they're only 2 people I've seen in my life that ever got dirty. They didn't get that from me because I can't even go. They have kitchen, you know, they never drop a thing but me. I got a flower. I've seen people have rugs, you know, woolen rugs on the kitchen floor. You don't see it on mine. Because I'd have more flour in that than I had in my pan. But anyway, that Arthur, he was one of the best looking boys you've most ever seen. His hands looked like a musician. He was tall and one of the best looking things you ever seen. Well, anyway, he went to Jacksonville to see his brother. And Charlie Frank was the oldest nephew that we had, my oldest sister's child. And Charlie Frank was so glad to see him, he put in for Arthur to stay with him over there and get a job and go to work. Well, Charlie Frank was a salesman for King & Company. and packing company there. Well, he got Arthur a job there. Well, where they was working at was down in this here freezer, you know, where they made sauces and things like that, and it was freezing in there all the time. So they all bundled up, you know, that worked down there, their coats and their shoes and things. Well, Arthur got where that he didn't even even put on a coat to go in there. He just went with a bare shirt sleeves. Well, it wasn't no time before that had done something to his brain.
Oh.
And so that he got bad off. And I'm going to tell you right now, we didn't know where he had ever come out of it. And he came to, they had him in one hospital right after another. And then he came to my house and he left there. And just up and packed up and went. And whenever he did, I got in touch with my sister. And I says, I believe he's gone to Macon. You know, from here. I knew Arthur wasn't right. And I told her where to carry him to Dr. Hope in Millersville Private Sanitarium. So they went right on up there and found him and carried him on to this hospital. And they began to give him treatments. And he came out from under it. And he's in, but now it's taken about 2 years to straighten that boy out.
But somebody had to do something about it.
And so that he's in Texas now, and he and his wife, they have a nursery there. You know, the children, and says some of those children is left there year round, and their parents never comes and gets them. Mm-hmm. And often them said to love those children's like they was their own. So they have a mighty nice place there and all, but I forget what part of Texas it is.
Well, now, how do you say what happened to Arthur? Did he come out of it, maybe?
Well, they give him treatments. Guy, I had a friend in Jacksonville that he was, he married this girl, and he had a cafe in Waycross, Georgia, and I knew Emmett before he ever bought this cafe there. And his wife was one of about the sweetest girls I almost ever seen. And she was her and two more women was the fastest stenographers it was in the state of Florida. And they put in wanting her to come to Tallahassee, to over there when legislature, and whenever they meet or whatever you call it. But anyway, they got to take down, I don't know whether you know it or not, they have to take down everything is said in shorthand. And then that has, whenever the meeting closes, then they got to type that up and have it ready to be mailed there at 12 o'clock into Washington. And so it was just too much for Aileen, that hard work there, and she went in a nervous breakdown. And somebody, Ms. Hart there, that owned the jewelry store there, was a mighty good friend of ours, and she told me, she says that Aileen says something's wrong. And I had started somewhere or another, and I saw a husband, and when he recognized my car, he stopped me. And he says, Aileen's left the house, and I don't know where she is. He says, would you go with me to try to find her? Well, whenever we got up to their street, we saw the car was back at the house up there. So I went on with Emmett up there, and the time I talked to Aileen, I could tell something was wrong. You know, and they hadn't been married about 6-8 weeks. And whenever I left, Emmett asked me, says, what in the world would you do? I said, I'd get care to Millersville as quick as I could get it up there. This is a private sanitarium, is what I'd do. And so his daddy was, you know, kind of a big shot in Jacksonville. And he went to take him care to Jacksonville, and his daddy went with him to Millersville and put him in that hospital. And he came back to Waycross to ask me, says, they had three treatments that they could give her, you know, for what was the matter with her. And one was mosquito. I don't know whether you ever heard of this or not. And throw them in malaria, you know, usually have malaria mosquitoes. And I use a shock treatment of that insulin that they can give them. And I told them, I said, well, now, I didn't know about all that other, but I said, malaria would be my bet, because I do know what malaria is. I should know that's what caused that.
Oh, really?
And but anyway, they put this malaria mosquito into a tube, glass tube, and connected it to her arm, and that mosquito would bite you, you know, until you went into malaria.
Never heard of anything like that.
Now, this is not a fair story. This is the truth. And if they can get them where that they can have fever, you know, chill every day, that they react to it, you know, faster. And so that she got to having chills every day. And so that her fever would go up yon around 106 or 78.
Good.
You see, that, you know, and they let that fever stay so long, you know, at that, I don't know how many minutes, no nothing like that, but then they give you something to cool it. And Eileen told me, she says that whenever that fever went off, so that bed would be just like you throw a bucket of water in there, you know, sweating that fever off. And every day she'd have that malaria chill. And they let them have those chills so many days, and then they stopped those chills. And after the first chill, she was all right.
Oh, is that right?
Her mind come back, had everything, and so that I just couldn't believe that it had had that much of, you know, to do with Eileen until Emmett told me he's taking her out of the hospital and asked me would I go to the beach with him. And for a week or two, and we owned a cottage at Fernandina Beach and right at on the boardwalk. And so I went with him down there. And you just couldn't believe that she was the same person she was before she went to Tallahassee, is what she was. And last card I had from them, anything like that, they was in Miami and they had a child, and she was doing fine.
Now, these old colored people come to you, you don't go to them. They learn from you, but you don't learn much from them.
Well, I've had colored folks to tell me things and all like that. Lots of times, old Amy Walker over there, she helped me with coal. I forget the name of that stuff, you know, she told me to get one time. It was the best cough medicine you could get. And you mix it with honey, I believe it was. And I forget what it was. But it would really cut that loose.
Mm-hmm.
And lots of those things that they have had to do. And all, but if I was you guy, I believe that that would help that dizziness.
Well, Amy was the right, she was right observant.
Amy was a mighty good nigga. I thought lots of Amy.
Yeah.
But God, I got along, I never have got a miss getting along with folks, you know, colored and all. I've had some mighty good colored friends.
Yeah.
Because I have lived, you know, where that there wasn't no white, it was long ways, you know, two white people and all. And I know when we lived at Larry, well, out from Larry, Georgia, we had a big mill there. And this nigger woman, her husband worked for us. She came up and asked me, do I have any quilt scraps? So I told her, yeah, and I gave them to her. Wasn't long before she came back, she asked me, would I get her a lining in town and some cotton and charge it to her husband? So I brought her the cotton and the line for a quilt, like she asked me to. And it wasn't, but it was just a colored section in there that we had a sawmill down in there. And a big plantation, and it had been a bit mighty big plantation. They called it the Holiday Place, and they had a big house on there where that boss used to live years ago, you know. It was a beautiful old home. And but it was lots of these niggas that lived in there in that section. And so I looked out one day, and down the road here come all them nigger women in that section there. They each one had their hands on that quilt, and one in the middle, and they had a stick up under it, coming down the road or singing a song, bringing me that quilt. It done quilted, hemmed, and everything. And they were bringing it to me. And you know, nobody in the world knows how much I appreciated that either. And, but it's a lot to know the way you treat people. And I know one night it fell, had to carry the inspector taking up a bunch of lumber. And he had to carry him to Albany. And so it was about 1 o'clock and Phil came in. So whenever he came in, Saul Jackson and Cap Jackson, well, Cap was Saul's son. And Phil drove, he had to come in the gate to come up to our house. And mosquitoes was bad down there as they are in Florida, too. How in the world the niggas stood it, I don't know. They got up and opened the gate for him to come in. And when Phil stepped out in front of the house, this nigger, you know, they Phil walked out to where they was, and it scared him. He didn't know what was the matter. And they said, "We saw you whenever you left, you know, and you hadn't come in," and says, "We was worried about old Miss," and says, "We've been down here watching the house so you came home."
Oh.
And you know, I always appreciated that too, but you don't find niggas like that. Just once in a while you find niggas with that character now.
I'd love to see that quilt.
I kept it, and it is in. I think the kids has got that quilt now into another quilt I made, you know, put a cover over it and all, but it was a pretty thing. But I used to be sick and things like that, you know, burning up with fever, and the niggas would come in there and waiting on me and do anything they could for me. And it wasn't where you could go to a doctor every time you wanted to either.
What would that old house look like, you said?
It was a one-story house, but it had, you know, like they all made them, you know, back in those days, a hall went down the middle, and then it had these rooms on each side of that hall, and then in the back, you know, it had this, the kitchen and the dining room and things fixed, you know, back there. It was a huge thing.
No, I never seen a house like that. What, a bedroom and living room?
Yeah, the bed. See, maybe you go in the front door, you know. I got an aunt's got a house where she's dead now. It's built like that. And the living room was on the right. And then the bedrooms, you know. And the living room would be here on the right, you know. And your next room was a bedroom on that right-hand side. Going down here, and then a hall would go across this way, you know. And that porch would go from near about all the way around the house, you know, come in, you know, you go in that cross hall back here, you see.
Yeah.
And that was the dining room and living, a dining room and kitchen went crossways this way, you see. That the way it would be fixed.
Mm-hmm.
But,
so that put the dining room and kitchen a little bit away from the
yeah,
house.
It was a hall between the, you know, that and the big, you know, the main part of the house and all. My daddy's brother had just about finished this house and it built out of fat lard. And he died, you know, just before it was finished. It was just about finished whenever he died.
Hey, well, let me tell you, remember I was down in the back. I had that pleurisy or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I found out what it was later. But it was a long time, and I suffered a good bit. And the thing that you recommended, I was using that old hotty pad.
A Baltimore Lamar?
Lenny
Mint.
The plaster.
Uh-huh.
The plaster. Now, what all do you use those plasters for? Now, that when you've got a whole lot of people around you, you need that, don't you?
Well, I don't remember, guy, just exactly what
the chest plaster.
Oh, yeah, that chest plaster.
Mm-hmm.
That does best thing for a cold. You get a woolen rag, they used to, and years ago, you know, if you were sick, you know, and you had cold, they would take a woolen cloth.
Yeah.
You know, they used to have, you know, have that white wool, you know, they'd make undercoats for babies, you know.
Yeah.
They used to have the dresses that long. I don't know whether you remember them or not. But they would take that, and my mother would take tallow and turpentine and things like that and put it in a pan and get it good and hot, and then put that rag in there, you know, and that'll soak it up. And then she would I'll tell you in a minute, Vic Salve. She'd put Vic Salve, you know, on that rag, and then put it on your chest and have it good and hot, and you put it there.
And then what did this tallow?
Well, that tallow, you know, keeps the other from blistering.
Oh,
keeps the turpentine from blistering.
Yeah.
And but I imagine I told him about that mustard oil. That mustard oil is one about the best stuff you ever seen, too.
Oh, that's when he was down in the bag.
Mm-hmm. Well, that mustard oil was my good stuff.
That's still common, isn't it?
Yeah.
Standard.
I heard of Dr. Boggs one time. He said that if people in the wintertime and put one of flannel rags on their chest and wear it the whole winter, and in the summertime, if they'd take 5 grains of quinine a night in the summertime, says doctors would go out of business.
A flannel cloth in the wintertime,
mm-hmm.
and 5 grains of quinine. I can believe that.
Says you as a doctor would go out of business, and he was a doctor himself.
Uh-huh.
He was one helped doctor my daddy before he died. But lots of those things, old remedies, folks hoots at it, but the doctors, lots of those things the doctors has gone back to.
You know there's not going to be enough doctors the way things go.
Well, Guy, I'm going to tell you, I know you and Faye, I know Faye don't. But according to the count of time of the Bible, from Adam's creation till now, from Adam's creation to this earth is brought into back in perfection, whenever it's restored to paradise, was to be 6,000 years. How many years have we got in those 6,000 years now before it's over? 4.5 years. 75 is the end of the 6,000 years. We're going to see a lot of things we've never seen before. And I'll never see again, too. Because, you know, the devil challenged God in the Garden of Eden. And whenever he led Adam and Eve astray, he told them he couldn't put a man on earth, he couldn't change. And God says, for that cause, I'm going to allow you to remain to show you that my power throughout this earth. Well, you see, the devil had no interruption for 2,520 years. Of course, now I can go back and show you, prove all these things to you, Faith. And that time was up in 1914. Then God began to interfere with the devil's business. You see, it was pretty good peace through this earth till after Babylon was overthrown. Nebuchadnezzar overthrew it back in 607, I think it was. 606 or 607, you see. And then Daniel's prophecy says it would be overturned until the right one come to rule. And so that would have been, you know, counting those years there, you know, the days and years, if you would count them, would give us 2,520 years from the time that happened until, you know, God would go to interfere with the devil's rule. Well, since 1914, this earth has seen no peace at all, has it? And it gets worse instead of, and that's whenever the preacher says, when Christ comes. They don't know Christ is already here. You know, the Bible said he'd rule among his enemies.
Mm-hmm.
You
well,
see.
Now, part of that is all this excessive fertilizer and all. How do you, what precaution can you take on your vegetables where you get them?
I just don't know. Only thing in the world.
Besides raising them, you raise them yourself.
The thing about it is get you some new ground that hasn't been worked to death.
Yeah. Yeah.
Plant your vegetables there and eat them, and then where you plant there, you can use this here commercial, lock fertilizer on it, and it'll never have a worm on it. You don't have to use no spray or nothing like that.
Well, now, maybe you all had beautiful vegetables right there. You didn't...
I had to use dust on them. That in the fall, spring, I didn't use much as did the other. But that dust is killing us, the guy. And what I'm telling you, things is going to get worse and worse, you know. Well, in other words, everything we eat's full of, spray and things that way, you know. Well, if it kills a worm, it'll actually kill you.
Yeah.
And this commercial fertilizer, one of the worst things has ever been for us, the people is concerned.
Yeah.
And if you got you a piece of new ground out there, and take it and plant vegetables and things on it, it don't take much for a garden for y'all.
No.
And then you don't, it'll make it, and you won't even have to spray it.
How you made it then?
Same thing. They're high on your sticks now. They don't have sticks high enough for the tomatoes, and I believe they're going on up to the top of the house. Looks like it.
And they'll just keep right on, won't they?
Oh, yeah.
Are they the ones right there at the door?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right there at the door.
And they're so pretty.
They are pretty, but they are those giant things that grow about as big as this thing here, but they won't have too many on them.
Yeah.
That you never have. Those others he had, I think he made 11 on two bushes. And so I think those may have about that many on it.
Let me tell you, I forget. It wasn't in the... It wasn't in the chest cold fee that I had it. It was in the back. I had that pain in the back.
Well, that mustard roll is about as good as stuff as
you use that for the back too.
You can just put that in. If you got a cold, you get somebody to rub your chest all on your arms and your back too.
Yeah.
And the best thing to do is put on if you got a outing shirt.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Or something like that. That mustard roll has a tendency to go up in your nose and your eyes,
Yeah.
But if you put on that shirt and button it up tight around here, and then go up under it, and I don't mean put no, most of the people put in stuff on there, they put such a little bit you don't know what's on there. Get your hand full and rub it on there, under your arm and your back too. And then if you got a heating pad, to put that heating pad on top of that. Now, buddy, you get results. Now, I have doctored people that, our hands, we had this white man who had been with us 19 years, and he was in bed shape whenever they called me and I went over there. And he said he got spitting that stuff up before daylight and they about choked him. That stuff was turning loose coming out.
Mm-hmm.
So fast. Well, that mustard, they even use that in hospital.
Oh, I didn't know that. It was loosened up so fast, and you just start spitting.
I just spit that stuff out just by wads. They use that in the hospital. Now, you can get 3 strengths on that.
Oh.
Of that mustard. You can get churins kind. You can get that for churin, and you can get it for... medium, and then extra strong. Now, if you got a very bad cold,